US stocks have been blazing higher amid a renewed surge in optimism over AI and expectations for Fed easing. But European stocks have not been far behind. That's despite political uncertainty in the Eurozone's second largest economy. Last week, the French government lost a vote of confidence, with lawmakers rebelling against plans to cut spending. The nation now has its fifth prime minister in just 2 years, and hopes that France will get its spending under control are fading. So what does political turmoil in France mean for investors? I'm Christopher Swan.
And I'm Belinda Peters. In today's Across the Pond, we'll explore what comes next for France. And with such political uncertainty, are global investors best off sticking with the US? Spoiler alert, we think not. Today, we have a double bill with French Chief Investment Officer Claudia Panseri and European Chief Economist Dean Turner. Thanks for joining us both.
Great. So, Claudia, France has been all over the headlines, all over the world recently, very dramatic occurrences. So run us through very briefly what happened and why, and also what comes next for France.
So thank you both for having me here today. So on Monday, 8th of September, François Bayrou lost the confidence vote and he had to resign. The day after, President Emmanuel Macron named a new PM, Sébastien Lecornu, which is now consulting different parties in order to propose a new government. Sébastien Lecornu has now the difficult task to present the 2026 budget in the parliament and obtain the support. France has a large deficit and it's part of the excess deficit procedure. And so the deficit reduction is particularly important for debt sustainability. So the difficulty here, you have to remember that since the general election in 2022, Macron has already named 5 PM and the National Assembly is very fragmented. So it's very difficult to have a majority to pass the budget, but also every time the PM is proposing a confidence vote, then we have a government collapse.
So how bad is France's debt problem really? Could you maybe elaborate a bit on that?
So the problem of France is the level of deficit, which has been above 5% for a very long period of time. The level of debt has been increasing since the debt crisis. And what we observe is that the capacity to reduce the deficit is low because government spending is above 50%. Government spending in France is 10 points above the European average. And so the problem today is we will need a deficit reduction, and so reducing the expenditure, but also increasing revenues. And with the fragmentation of the National Assembly, the government is unable to present a budget which is cutting more than what the European is expecting. So the problem, I will say, is that the trajectory is not sustainable over a long time. If we have a deficit which is above 5%, that is also mean that we are adding 3 points of debt for each year. The positive element is that France government debt remain affordable. So France is currently having a spending 3.6% of annual revenues on debt services, and relative to other countries is pretty low. In the case of US is about 13%, and the average rate on the holding debt is only about 1.8%. So clearly for the time being, the cost of a debt is low relative to other countries, but this cost of debt is increasing because the spread relative to bond is also rising.
So I think based on that, then we're not expecting another sovereign debt crisis. But if we sort of swing to the more positive side, where do we see opportunities, if anywhere, in European debt?
Yeah, we have a positive view on high-grade bonds, in particularly for those countries with improving debt profile. We advise against holding long-dated French bonds, given continued war pressure on yield, but we see some value now in the short term end of the French government bonds. We like the 2-5 year brackets. When we check the premium to the Bund and compare this premium to the Italian premium to the Bund, they are trading now in line. So that's also meaning that in the short term, the risk of having a large budget is already priced in.
So given the current political and fiscal backdrop, do you think there's a meaningful risk of a renewed European debt crisis?
I'm very glad you asked that question. In a word, no. I think the chances of that are very small. The reasons for this is that despite the volatility we have seen in Eurozone bond markets, this is part of a broader global trend that as interest rates do start to come down, and particularly in the US, should start to settle down as investors get a little bit more confidence in the outlook. Moreover, what I think we also need to appreciate is that unlike when we've had previous crises in the Euro area, the toolkit available to the central bank, the ECB, is much broader now, and therefore the tools they have to stabilise any volatility in the market is unparalleled compared to what we've seen in the past. So, look, whilst we may see volatility, debt crises or talk thereof seems to be going a little bit far in my view.
Obviously we've sort of focused on some of the bad news from France, and we do tend to really associate sort of innovation in AI with the US and China. But we've also been seeing France making some of the running. I mean, can we talk about some of the positive sides to French innovation and the business environment?
Yeah, I think everyone is focused on the negative side of the debt problem that France has, the fragmentation of the National Assembly. But on the other side, there are plenty of private investors which are also financing new French startup in the artificial intelligence. So we have recently seen some large multinational in the IT companies investing in French AI startup. And as I was saying, the appetite from French private investor is also quite tight, and the government is also investing more on AI. The difference, I have to say, between US investment and French investment is due to the scale. I mean, you say multi-billion investment in US, while in France, the amount of investment remain pretty low compared to the US one.
So turning more broadly to the Eurozone, Dean, how do you now assess the economic growth and corporate earnings outlook for the region?
Yeah, sure. So if we look back through the first half of this year, the Eurozone economy has actually shown some surprise resilience. Now, a lot of that has been down to the trade situation with a lot of front loading boosting Eurozone growth in the first half of this year. And we have seen a modest slowdown since then. And it would be my expectation that that gently cooling down of growth will continue for a couple of quarters yet before we return to something more akin to trend growth. Now, what that looks like from an overall picture is that we're probably looking at growth in the euro area of around 1% this year and something around 1% next year. So not far from trend. So, you know, despite the common perception that growth has actually been quite weak, if anything, you know, the eurozone's actually been performing relatively well. Now, how that's translating into corporate earnings, it's always important to emphasise that the stock market is not the economy. The composition of the stock market is always very different to the underlying economy. And due to that, you know, we have seen some earnings per share weakness in Europe this year. We're looking for earnings per share to contract by around 3% in both the Eurozone and the UK this year. And a lot of that is due to sector specific factors. But next year, the outlook gets a little bit brighter. We're actually looking for corporate earnings growth to start go positive. We're looking for a number of around 5% in both the Eurozone and the UK next year, which should be a factor that can help support markets.
And a quick follow-up on that, the ECB also left rates on hold last week. Do you think that we could expect more easing perhaps?
I think that the ECB easing cycle is probably over for the time being. The reason for that is partly linked to what I said in the previous question. You know, we have had some surprise resilience when it comes to Eurozone growth. With that, inflation, whilst heading lower, you know, the great disinflation, as President Lagarde referred to it in the press conference, has ended. needed. So, you know, the glide down from here is going to be much more moderate. So that gives policymakers much more scope to sit back and assess incoming data before making their next decision. And in my mind, I think that points to the ECB remaining on hold at 2% for quite a prolonged period.
So if we move from the Eurozone's second largest economy to the largest economy, Germany has embarked on this ambitious investment plan that we've been looking forward to for some time now from the Merz government. And the DAX is sort of one of the highlights of global equity markets this year. What's the latest here? How's the stimulus plan coming along? And what are our views of the German stock market?
Yeah, sure. So when it comes to Germany, this has really been the jewel in the crown, essentially, for the Eurozone economy over the last few months, at least in terms of expectations. I mean, let's be clear, you know, growth in Germany is still pretty weak. But we have had very positive noises from the German government in terms of the speed at which they're looking to deploy this huge fiscal package that they're going to be unleashing over the next few years. That in itself should be enough to see growth in Germany pick up quite smartly over the next year. You know, from growing at around 0.2%, so, you know, call that zero amongst friends, this year, I would expect that growth in Germany can jump to over 1% next year. So, and most of that will be down to the impact of this fiscal stimulus. Now, when it comes to the DAX, clearly stock markets are very forward looking. So a lot of this fiscal stimulus has been anticipated, and that explains a lot of the outperformance of the DAX relative to not just European markets, but also a number of global indices. That said, my expectation would be that we can still continue to see some pretty solid earnings growth, and the potential for positive surprises there certainly remains. There's been a lot of focus on German industry of late. You know, the auto sector is coming into focus in particular, but we should bear in mind that the auto sector only makes up around 1% of the euro area stock market as a whole, so it's a lot smaller than people think. So even if we do continue to see some weakness there, which I don't expect will continue, quite frankly, that's not going to be enough to detract from the overall market. So, you know, further gains in coming months does look pretty likely outcome in our view.
And trade tariffs have, you know, been a big topic this year, and we've gotten more certainty over trade relations with the US lately. So do you think this is helping the situation?
Absolutely. We can always debate about the terms of the trade deal. I don't think that's what's important for the outlook for the economy. The key thing that that investors are focused on is what the trade backdrop means for uncertainty. Uncertainty means that businesses don't invest and they hold back on hiring. Now we have that certainty of what the deal looks like, I would expect that we can start to see that some business investment does start to return. Companies should start hiring again, have that confidence in the outlook. And that's going to be a key factor that supports growth. Now, let's be clear, you know, there will still be lingering doubts as to whether this trade deal will persist or whether there will be tweaks along the way. But overall, now the broad parameters have been set, that seems to me like a good outcome, because that can start to, you know, increase in certainty across the whole economy.
Okay, and for our last question, from a diversification standpoint, I think it's also important to consider the currency effect here. European stocks have actually outperformed the US if we take into account the rising euro, and that's also important from the perspective of US investors who have diversified abroad. So what do we see as the outlook for the euro, and why might that be, you know, an incentive to diversify?
So when you think about that the ECB is very likely ending its easing cycle, while the Fed is expecting to resume rate cuts on the back of slowing growth, the gap between interest rate in US and in Europe is reduced. So that will support the euro in the coming month. And according to our estimation, we have an exchange rate which is about 1.21 by the end of the year. So for clients, US clients, which are looking for some diversification, valuation of European asset is quite appealing, but also the currency appreciation may help in order to diversify also the monetary side. So I think the possibility for non-European to be invested in European asset is a clear way to diversify away from the US one.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Claudia, and thanks to our listeners as well. We can delve into specific securities on these podcasts, but you can explore some of these with your UBS representative. But just to sum up here, we see tactical opportunities in short and medium-term French bonds and select corporates, while temporary euro weakness may present attractive entry points for long-term investors. For equities, we remain cautious on French domestic stocks due to fiscal and political uncertainty, but favor diversified European exposure through Swiss high-quality dividends, European quality stocks, European industrials. We'll be back soon with another installment of Across the Pond, and in the meantime, have a great week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.